Good morning again. The court calls U.S. v. Barnett. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of this honorable court. In a court martial by members, one of the military judge's basic functions is to provide instructions to members. In this case, the military judge abused his discretion when he failed to provide the requested instruction that the military members not be allowed to negate the granted Article 13 credit. I'd like to talk about the three factors that determine when a military judge has abused his discretion in not providing the requested instruction.
Before you talk about the three factors, as I understand this case, the judge found, in response to the Article 13 motion, there was no intent to punish. The conditions were not tantamount to confinement. So, why isn't this HBRD? He got a freebie. There was nothing here supporting credit under Article 13. He got a gift from the military judge. So why isn't any error in the instruction harmless beyond a reasonable doubt?
Your Honor, I disagree that he got a gift from the military judge. Determining Article 13 credit is up to the military judge's discretion. The military judge found that the base file violated a local AFI. This court has found...
A base regulation.
Yes, Your Honor.
This isn't an AFI case.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
That they violate a local regulation and that the individuals were subjected to dangerous, harmful situations, whether it was going through scrap metal or being put in vans that were unair-conditioned in 120-degree weather, that they were being treated differently than other military members on base in a way that required that the military judge felt required Article 13.
Okay, but he found it wasn't punishment, as I understand. And he found that it wasn't tantamount to confinement.
Well, he found that there was no intent to punish.
There was no intent to punishment.
Yes, right. Your Honor.
Right, there was no intent to punish, and it wasn't tantamount to confinement. So it was hard work, it was sweaty, and it was unpleasant. And there's a local reg that said something or other, and therefore that gives rise to 13 credit?
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't say that he didn't find that the actions taken by the members were not tantamount to confinement. However, in order to overrule this judge's Article 13 credit, this court would have to...
No, I'm not talking about overruling his credit. I'm saying he gave him credit. Nobody's talking about dispatching the credit. The question I'm asking is whether, because the credit was basically a gratuity, why isn't any error associated with the instruction HBRD?
Your Honor, I disagree that this was a gratuitous grant on the part of the military judge. Even if the military judge said that this wasn't tantamount to confinement, he clearly found that the appellant in this case was entitled to Article 13 credit. And military judges frequently say stuff during their rulings that sometimes contradict what happens, but the military judge carefully considered the law in this case, carefully considered all the facts in this case, and based on the law and the facts, awarded this credit.
Go ahead.
Counsel, I've read both the Balboa case and the Gammons cases that y'all rely on. It seems to me that this is a case of novel impression. How do we handle members getting an instruction on a pretrial credit?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in the civilian world, that's typically an administrative thing that the judge does after the sentence is adjudicated. You look at the sentence guidelines, it calls for 3 to 5 years, you give him 4 years and say, okay, you've been in pretrial confinement for a year, you get three more to serve or something, whatever. Why do the members need to know this information unless the accused wants them to know it?
Your Honor, the defense counsel in this case objected from the very beginning to the members knowing about this information.
Because it could inure to the accused's advantage, say, please don't punish me anymore, I've received severe punishment. But other times it could be that let the judge give me credit after you guys decide what you're going to do.
Yes, Your Honor.
So why don't we let the accused make that decision?
Yes, Your Honor, and the cases that basically stand for letting the members know really refer to pretrial confinement under RCM 1005E5 refers to pretrial confinement, and RCM 1001B1 also refers to the trial counsel being required to inform the members about pretrial restraint. So none of these RCMs that have been relied for this type of instruction in the past refer to Article 13 credit, although Article 13 credit has been analogized to pretrial confinement in some situations.
Yeah, but even that, you don't tell the members he's entitled to credit for so many days pretrial confinement, do you? You just say he's been in pretrial confinement since May the 1st or whatever.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think courts vary on the instructions that they provide depending on what's being requested. Defense counsel objected to the instruction provided by the military judge in this case, but the military judge found that he was obligated under United States versus Allen to provide this credit. Appellant's position is not that that is required.
It's not the problem in this case, if it is a problem, the members' questions.
Sorry, Your Honor.
Is the issue in this case the members' questions? Are you taking issue with anything other than how the judge responded or did not respond to the members' questions?
Yes, Your Honor. That highlights the situation, and that's very analogous to United States versus Greaves.
Well, I understand. Does it highlight the situation, or is it the situation? Are you contending that there is any error in this case but for the fact that the members asked these questions and the military judge did not respond with a tailored instruction?
Yes, Your Honor. Additionally, besides the military members' questions, the defense counsel asked for a specific instruction from the military judge, which he failed to provide. So under both of those bases, the military judge abused his discretion.
What was that? What was the instruction he failed to provide?
Well, defense counsel, the specific instruction was that the defense counsel asked the military judge to instruct the members that they were not allowed to negate any of the Article 13 credit.
Wait, in response to the members' questions, though, correct?
Yes, sir.
I mean, you're not suggesting that the military judge is supposed to give that instruction sui sponte, are you?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. How do you deal with the issue of prejudice here? It's not like Balboa where they said, can we negate 68 days? And then they gave him a sentence of whatever in 68 days, which is pretty blatant. Here you end up with a sentence that is well within the normative structure of the thing, and it's not like it's 8 months, was it? It's not 8 months and 100 days. It's 8 months. So how do you deal with your burden of demonstrating prejudice, even if you're correct across the board on the instructions?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the prejudice is simply espousing the fact that the incorrect instruction was provided. We can't look into the jury and what the jury is thinking at the time. The military judge provided an incorrect instruction, and it's impossible to be in there as part of the deliberations for them. So that was the harm that the incorrect instruction was provided.
What specifically was wrong with the instruction, and what specifically was wrong with the military judge's answers to the questions by the members?
Well, the instructions didn't answer the question that was being asked by the military members. The instructions relied on answers to whether the instructions were based largely on whether they can consider the Article 13 credit for extenuation and mitigation and how the Article 13 credit would be applied, which would be to be applied against their sentence. But the instructions never answered whether the military members could negate some of that punishment. And specifically, the members were confused about the term appropriate and what the term appropriate meant. And at least some of them believe that appropriate meant that they should determine whether that they should relitigate the Article 13 pretrial motion.
And you know that how?
From their questions, Your Honor. The instructions were provided related to appropriate, to being appropriate, and it is, to a certain extent, an inference, Your Honor.
Counsel, what's the distinction, in your view, between credit for pretrial confinement and credit for an Article 13 violation, or a Article 13 credit, whether there was a violation or not? That's what he gave. Do we view those two as being the same? Because our precedent seems to be all on pretrial confinement, right?
Yes, Your Honor. The Article 13 credit has been analogized to pretrial confinement to some extent with Mason, but it is different because it's not specifically analyzed in the RCMs that I previously mentioned, 1001 and 1005. So to a certain extent, the issue that Judge Cox is calling about when a military member, when the military members are instructing, how they're instructing in Article 13 hasn't really been hashed out. And I don't think there's any requirement that the military judge, even if there's a requirement to inform the members on pretrial confinement, there's no requirement to inform the members about Article 13 credit.
You don't think they should be informed under any circumstance? And the reason I ask that is, what if the accused raises it at some point as a mitigation element, as they did here? What about the argument that they've opened the door at that point?
Yes.
Or should it just never be allowed to be mentioned?
Yes, Your Honor. There can definitely be situations where it would be appropriate to instruct on Article 13 credit. But in this case, we're not worried about appellant in this case receiving two bites at the apple. We're worried about the fact that he was awarded 100 years of credit and he's not being given anything at all. So there are some situations where
he may not be getting anything.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's the authority for asserting that members can't negate credit?
Your Honor, under
Balboa seems to imply the opposite.
But in Balboa, the clear holding in Balboa is waiver.
Yes,
we never got into whether it's good or bad.
But there's some dicta in Balboa that seems to imply the opposite.
Yes, Your Honor.
In any event, what's the basis for the assertion that members simply can't do that?
Well, Your Honor, in Balboa, I disagree, because in Balboa it says that the instructions are provided related to the pretrial confinement credit as largely for mitigation purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So to tell the members, he's going to have 68 days credit.
Okay, leave Balboa aside.
Yes,
Your Honor. What's the basis for the ultimate assertion that this is something members can't do?
And then in United States versus Ingong, Mosby says that if Article 13 credit is established, the member is entitled to the credit that's been awarded to that member.
Mm-hmm.
So not something that's been clearly fleshed out in the law, but we know that when members are informed, it's for mitigation purposes, and the member is entitled to Article 13 credit when it's been awarded.
The decision to give Article 13 credit, is that a question of law or a question of fact?
When Article 13 credit's been granted?
When it's due, whether it's due.
I believe it would be a mixed question of law and fact. It would be an abuse of discretion.
Is it a question for members or is it a question for a judge whether someone should get Article 13 credit?
It's a question for the military judge, Your Honor. That concludes my remarks. Pending any further questions from the court.
All right, thank you. You get rebuttal still if you wish. Counsel for the government.
Judge Baker, members of the court. Good morning. I'm Captain Brian Mason, along with Mr. Roger Bruce. I'm going to represent the United States in this matter. Now, on the granted issue, essentially we have two issues. We have the original instruction and then the instruction in response to the member's question. With regards to the original instruction, under RCM 1005E5, that discussion section, this court's holdings in Davidson and Miller really made clear that the military judge, in his exercising an abundance of caution, did the right thing by providing the military or the court members instruction about the confinement credit that was awarded in this case.
Did the military judge answer the members' questions?
Yes, Your Honor, he did.
And how so?
Well, Your Honor, in looking at all the different instructions that he provided, he focused on not only in the main charge, but also in response to specific questions, and I refer the court to Joint Appendix 113 and 114, where he essentially reread some of the earlier provided instructions. He said that I've determined the accused was to be granted 100 days of credit, and so as I instructed earlier, if the court of judges confined, then 100 days of credit will be granted, already will be applied toward the at the correctional facility. And as he provided earlier in the instructions, he told the members to judge an appropriate sentence that's fair and just when it's imposed and not in reliance upon the actions that others may take. So looking at all those instructions together, he did answer the members' members' questions, Your Honor, and the instructions he provided were appropriate.
How did he answer this question? And maybe for ease of understanding, and please, this is just an example, if we consider 300 days as appropriate confinement, but we know the 100 days credit is there, but we think the 300 days confinement should be actual confinement, so we bump it up to 400, because we know we're going to subtract 100 days, is it legal for us to do that? What was the answer that he gave him to that question?
Well, Your Honor, he says that it's their job to determine a sentence that they believe is appropriate for the accused, that he's been found for the offenses he's been found guilty of, considering all the evidence that he's been that they've been presented in the case. And one of the factors for them to consider is the fact that he'd be granted 100 days. So his answer is, it's their job to judge an appropriate sentence that's fair and just when it's imposed, and not reliance upon the actions of others.
So is he saying that it's okay for them to bump it up to 400 days?
No, Your Honor. I think that this case is more analogous to the Balboa case, where nothing in these instructions either expressly or impliedly invited the members to enhance the sentence.
So he was saying it was not okay.
When looking at all the instructions together, Your Honor, I think, like Balboa, it makes clear that this confinement credit was presented in light of mitigation, not aggravation.
But if you look at all of the instructions overall, you know, I think that it's hard to really criticize what he said. But my concern is that whether or not the military judge answered a specific question that he was asked by the members.
Well, Your Honor, if the question is, did he say no, you cannot nullify the credit, he did not say no.
What is the answer to the question in the government's view?
Well, Your Honor, the answer is unclear at this point on whether or not they can do that.
What should the answer be?
Your Honor,
with respect to Article 13 credit.
Your Honor, I think that the best practice in handling this would really be to leave it up to the accused to determine whether or not this gate is opened, and then to allow the members to consider the evidence for what they deem to be appropriate. If we look at this court's opinion in Gammons, that's really essentially what we have. So we have a situation where the accused is the gatekeeper. They can choose whether or not to put this evidence in. But once they do, then the members...
So let me give you an extreme example of flogging, which the military judge awards 10-1 credit for punishment, unlawful punishment. And the members come back and say, we really hate this accused. We think he deserved everything he got. May we add the 10-1 credit on top of our sentence so as to nullify any credit? And it's the government's position that the correct answer is you should do whatever you feel is appropriate. As a matter of law.
Your Honor, I think the answer to the question really is going to be dependent on how did that information get in front of the members.
So even if the appellant says, so if the appellant brings it up and says, look what the cruel government has done to me, you're saying, fair game, you can nullify the credit, even though it's a credit for something the government's already done, that the judge has determined he's entitled to. The judge can say, you have at it.
No, Your Honor. I'm not saying that that's what the judge can instruct them on. What I'm saying is the instructions that were provided in this case, that they can consider the evidence and fashion an appropriate sentence when it's imposed, fair and just.
So we moved you off this case to trying to address the abstract question of law because you said it hadn't been addressed yet. And we're saying, well, what if we address it? What would your answer be? And you're trying to duck that by bringing us back to the case that we have and saying, please see this pile of mush.
Let me put it in a different way, counsel. Like, let's say that the accused says in his sentencing, you know, oh my gosh, you shouldn't really punish me because the government flogged me, right? And I think what you're saying is it's fair then for the government to say or to introduce evidence that, oh, well, don't, he already got 10-1 credit because we flogged him, right? But that doesn't answer the next step, which is, what did the members do with that information? And I think that's what our question is. Do you have an answer to it? Like, what may they do with it?
Well, Your Honor, the best answer I have is the judge should instruct the members that they should consider all the evidence in fashioning an appropriate sentence, and that they should consider it when they're judging a sentence that's fair and just when it's imposed, just as this military judge did.
Independent of any credit given or taking into account any credit given?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's necessary for the judge to go there. I think the instructions...
But if the members are asking... I'm sorry.
I mean, isn't the military judge going there when he says you can consider any relevant evidence, and that includes anything that he may have gotten for Article 13? He's telling them they can consider that, it seems to me. And if they then do consider it, and if they then add on whatever it may be, that essentially appears to nullify what the military judge did, rightly or wrongly, but that seems to me to be the result.
Well, as I cited a few Federal Circuit cases in my brief, nullification is certainly not to be positively sanctioned by instructions, certainly. That's something that the member should not be doing, either the findings or sentencing case. But that's not what happened here. The military judge provided appropriate instructions and encouraged him to form an appropriate sentence. And like Balboa, instructions taken as a whole shed this confinement credit in a mitigation.
Well, but they ask the dispositive question, and the judge gave them a mess of pottage. They said, Your Honor, can we do this? And His Honor said, where does that leave us?
Well, Your Honor, where that leaves us is in a couple different places.
In the pottage.
First, was it within his discretion to provide the instructions that he did? And when we look at it, as opposing counsel brought up earlier, there's essentially the standard...
I'm not really asking whether he abused his discretion. I'm asking, what should he do?
Well, Your Honor, certainly it was within his discretion to answer the question directly. No question. He could have, in his discretion, said...
And if you were answering it directly, what would you say?
Your Honor?
And if you were answering it directly, what would you say?
Given that he is entitled to the 13 credit, the answer is probably no. You cannot just negate the credit straight off, given that he is entitled to it.
But it's a right without a remedy, isn't it?
Well, in this particular case...
In most cases. I mean, unless the members just go haywire, it would be 12 months and 68 days. There's no way to tell.
There isn't, Your Honor, really.
I mean, you know, then it's you know, it's the CCA and appropriateness.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And as you brought up earlier, this is a case where there is no prejudice. The appellant truly did receive a gift from a military judge. He specifically found...
Well, now, at this point, can we relitigate the Article 13 issue?
No, Your Honor. We're not asking you to. But as...
It sounded to me like you just said that it was
a gift.
It's
an
Article 13 credit. It's one or the other.
Well, Your Honor, what we're asking you to do is evaluate that in the light, as Judge Tukey brought up earlier, in light of prejudice. There is no prejudice here for several reasons, and that's one of them. The judge specifically found at page 45 that there was these conditions were not 10 amounts of confinement.
Hang on. You seem to be suggesting then that even if it was 8 months and 100 days, you'd say there's no prejudice because, gee, this isn't really Article 13 credit. Is that really your position?
That's part of a reason.
Why isn't that relitigating whether he is entitled to an Article 13 credit?
Did
the government certify that question?
No, Your Honor, and I'm not asking you to evaluate that in terms of relitigating the appropriateness of that decision. But certainly one of the things that this court should look at is prejudice, and that goes to that prong. Now, there are other reasons why there are not prejudices.
But isn't it either Article 13 credit or it's not? I mean, how can we look beyond that? The military judge found that their Article 13 credit was justified, and so that's what we're dealing with. And we may have another case with different facts that comes up to us at a later point, but at this point we're dealing with Article 13 credit, and how do we treat that? Not why he gave it, that's off the table.
I mean, you could say it was a generous award of Article 13 credit, but I don't think you can say that we take that into consideration to determine whether there was prejudice from an error, assuming that there was one.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Well, there's other reasons why there's not prejudice as well. If you look at the maximum punishment that the appellant was facing, he was looking at 14 years, 6 months of confinement, and dishonorable discharge. Trial counsel argued for 24 months of confinement. The appellant specifically asked for a bad conduct discharge, and that's at page 62 of the joint appendix. His trial defense counsel argued, quote, an amount for it, quote, an amount of confinement that will allow him to return to his family and give him a punitive discharge. And that's on page 97. Now, despite the maximum punishment, despite trial counsel's argument, appellant received a very favorable sentence. Like in the Miller case, he actually received a sentence, pretty much what he asked for. Some confinement, 8 months, and a bad conduct discharge. So there really isn't prejudice in this case. He earned his sentence. He asked for his sentence. His counsel argued for the sentence, and that's what he did.
Is the Article 13 credit now subtracted from the 8 months administratively? So he actually would serve 5.5 months?
Your Honor, yes. I mean, if the judge's sentence is 8 months, which it was here, then the 100 days is just taken right off of that. Absolutely.
So the question, we just don't know whether they added the 100, now you subtract it back so you're even, or whether you start and he got the benefit.
Well, Your Honor, yeah. We would have to speculate.
I guess that's why I was questioning the wisdom of giving the members a chance to consider it unless the accused herself wants them to.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that brings up an excellent point, and that goes right back to United States versus Gammons. And as the lower court below analogized this case, and this is Gammons' case. He opened up the door when he put in all of those defense exhibits raising that issue. And if you look at some of the specific things that he brought up, if you look at Joint Appendix 165 through 171, it talks about, all right, you have those defense exhibits. In one of the letters, it says, it was a mutual consensus between myself and other airmen assigned to Thunder Par that we were already being punished before we even found guilty. Another one says, 167, I felt like it was absolute punishment working there. And then at 169, they looked at us and immediately placed judgment on our character and stature in the Air Force. But he opened up the door to this instruction by the judge. The judge had to instruct on how to receive this evidence. Because if we look at the Balboa case, we have a situation where the court has already recognized that the duration and nature of pretrial restraint is appropriate to be instructed on because, quote, at least if such information is construed in the interest of reliable and truthful sentence.
But you would agree he opened the door to members being told that he would get credit, but not necessarily to members nullifying that credit, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree.
You're not
with
making that.
That
argument, but you're saying once he opened the door to arguing that this had occurred, the government was entitled for the members to know that it would be addressed.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. If you look at trial counsel's argument on that issue, that's exactly how he argued it is. You don't have to worry about that because essentially the judge already gave him 100 days credit. And that's important because if you look at the overall arguments by counsel, this was not a huge issue for either side. I mean, trial counsel argued for approximately 12 pages and argued on this issue for about one. Defense counsel argued on this issue for about 16 pages, and it was less than two. So, I mean, this was not a major issue in the case.
So in terms of what the members could consider is they could consider the fact that all these bad things happened to him, but they could also consider that the 100 days had been given for that. But they can consider all of that and then arrive at what they think is a fair sentence.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And every indication is after they received all of the instructions, that's what happened. We'd have to.
And that's how both counsel argued the issue?
The trial counsel argued it as, you don't have to worry about this because he's already been given 100 days of credit. Defense counsel argued it as, well, the government's already gotten their punishment out of him, so you don't have to worry.
So they both used it the way that you would expect them to?
Yes, Your Honor. And if you focus on, you'd have to purely speculate in order to get to the point that you think, okay, well, the members added this 100 days on. Because if you look at how they announced the sentence, and I addressed this in my brief, they announced it as, 13 minutes later after they came back, they said, 0 years, 8 months, 0 days. This isn't a situation like Senior Judge Everett recognized in Balboa where they just, 12 months and 68 days when there's 68 days of pretrial confinement credit. Pure speculation that they actually increase the sentence. It just doesn't make sense. There's no evidence of prejudice here. So even if this court finds error, we're not there. But there shouldn't be a finding of error in this case because the appellant opened up the gate to this evidence when he presented all these letters. The military judge properly instructed on how to receive this evidence and provided an instruction that was within his range of discretion in answering the question. His instructions were legally correct and within his discretion provided. And without any further questions from the panel, that will conclude our presentation.
Thank you, counsel.
Sure.
Counsel for the appellant.
Counsel, there's nothing wrong, is there, with a sentencing authority, be it a military judge or a court-martial, for coming to the conclusion that I want the accused to serve one clean 1 year in the brig or the stockade or the Leavenworth or wherever you go for a year these days. And in order to get that, I've got to give him 15 months. It's done every day, isn't it? In the analytical mind of a judge?
Your Honor, I don't think they're supposed to be considering collateral consequences when they determine a sentence that they provide an accused.
Well, you know, I was a trial judge for a long, long time, and I always tried to decide how much new time a guy should have, and that depended on how much old time he was going to get credit for.
Yes, Your Honor. They can consider it, like I said before, for extenuation, mitigation, and aggravation, so to that extent. But this issue had already been litigated, and the military judge had already awarded this.
Counsel, what happens if a member asks a military judge a question about parole? To say, you know, if we give him 10 years, when's he actually going to get out? What would be the proper answer to a question like that?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that would generally be considered a collateral consequence. But this isn't a collateral consequence because it's...
No, but what would the answer be that the military judge should give to that question? If you don't.
I think it would be that they're not supposed to consider... it would probably be a reiteration of the previously given instructions that they're not supposed to consider actions that would be taken by people outside of the court.
Which isn't really a collateral consequence, is it? I mean, collateral consequences are deportation and registering as a sex offender and that kind of thing. This goes directly to sentence, does it not?
But, I mean, Isn't that the instruction that... the military judge gave in this case that they're not supposed to consider the actions of others and they're supposed to come up with the sentence that they think is appropriate?
Yes, Your Honor, but then that also contradicts when he tells them that he's receiving Article 13 credit and that they're supposed to be considering that for an appropriate punishment. So it's
Where did he say that?
It's part of his instructions.
But he tells them that they should consider the 100 days as part of the appropriate punishment.
Judge said in JA-65, in determining an appropriate sentence in this case, you should consider that the accused has been granted 100 days of confinement credit. And in this case, the trial counsel, defense counsel objected to the members knowing about the Article 13 credit at all. Trial counsel, the government, wanted the military members to know about the Article 13 credit. Then when the members asked, can we negate that credit, defense counsel said no, government counsel said don't tell them that, Your Honor. So the position that the government's taking today is different than the position that the government took during trial. The government shouldn't benefit from the fact that the military judge provided an incorrect instruction.
Well, is it your position that the defense is free to talk about all the bad things that happened to him before his trial and how he's already been punished, but that the government is not allowed to introduce and that the military judge is not allowed to tell them that he's already received credit for that?
No, Your Honor. This case does become a little bit convoluted. I wouldn't say that the defense counsel opened the door. The military judge determined without these exhibits that he was going to provide this instruction. But with that said, the defense did essentially waive that issue by putting these exhibits in. The question is whether the instruction should be given The question is whether that 100 days can be negated. So that's essentially what we're talking about here.
And what evidence do you have that it was negated? I mean, you have the burden here, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, we do have a hypothetical from the members that suggested that they wanted to negate it. And beyond that, that's what we have to offer to meet that burden. Lastly, I just might like to mention a case that was mentioned in the brief but not highlighted, United States versus Greece, where the military members asked if the punitive how a punitive discharge would affect the military member's retirement, and the judge abused his discretion in that case by not informing them about how a punitive discharge would affect his retirement. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel, and the case is now submitted, and we will stand in recess until tomorrow morning.
Court stands in recess.